Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Thank you for joining us once again.
Yes, thank you and welcome.
This is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. I know it's a bit redundant, baseball show podcast. I know. I'm working on it. I'm going to figure it out.
Be something easier to remember,
like just West Coast Bias. Yeah, apparently there's some Canadian hockey podcast that already has that.
What are you gonna do? The problem? I don't know.
Yeah, it's all right. But we're still alive, even though if you read the headlines, San Francisco is in deep, deep peril. But I guess the whole world for that.
The whole world not as bad as Seattle right now, our neighbors to the north. But
that is true. But yeah, we're still here, all right?
We're still here. We're not coughing. We don't have a fever. No shortness of breath. But
David Price is dealing after a rocky first start. We currently have the game on right now as we speak. This will obviously be late for you guys listening, but he's looking great. He's got a 7-0 lead right now in the third. Now, he got a little touched up, but hey, you know, it's spring. That's okay.
It's spring.
So did Garrett Cole, right? He got really touched up.
He did.
Would Miggy have two back-to-back homers on him or something?
Something like that.
That was pretty good.
Well, I think maybe not necessarily back-to-back, but two in a row for him. But
I think they were both back-to-back, though. I don't know. I don't watch Tigers games, but I saw the clip. Anyway, we are back. Baseball is on. We got
the sights and the sounds. I mean, it's spring training is in full swing, and we are less than 3 weeks away from opening day.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
That's the best time of year. It's like Christmas is coming, you know?
It's just going to be us talking about how excited we are.
Yeah!
Get this season going. I'm ready.
Oh, man. Now, have you done any mock drafts?
I have not yet done any mock drafts. I'm still in the midst of my own research before I get into what the computers say.
Oh, that is true. Now, just to clarify going forward, now we're in a league that I've been in for years, and it is, and Sam has joined the last couple years ago.
Yeah. So 2 years. This will be my third season.
It is a roto league, 10 by 10. So I know that's not very common. In fact, it's probably not common at all. But, you know, when we're talking about fantasy strategy, that's basically what I'm talking about. So it can kind of pertain to a 5x5 head-to-head league, I'm sure, to a certain extent. But there are certain guys that you're going to hear me talking about who I value generally more than maybe I would in a 5x5 league where steals are extremely important. But in a 10x10, and I like that, you know, there's not any one thing that you can cheat on and win. You really have to be good.
Right, you have to be very well balanced on the high end of average to
Yeah, when I'm talking advice, that's basically what we're talking about. And you should too. You guys should all aspire to greater things. Play 10x10. You can do it.
It's a bit overwhelming at times, especially for a newbie like me in the baseball fantasy world. It is far more complex than fantasy football just about every level.
Fantasy football is a piece of cake after you do 180 days of roto baseball. You go to fantasy football, you're like, what? How many? 16 games? That's it? Come on. Easy. Done. Yeah. Anyway, so that's it. You know, because we had an email, I don't know, I think it was last year, and somebody was like, how come you guys never value this or that or steals on it? And then I realized that I never really clarified. I think we did or we had in the past.
Right,
but,
it's good to going good into to it qualify again. It, qualify it again, and we're providing more information, looking at more stuff per player than I guess most leagues probably.
I think so, yeah. And it's baseball. I mean, it's the fantasy, right? Like, that is the fantasy. It's to be a manager. It's I know more about baseball than you, and I'm going to prove it. And what better way to prove it than to have the most parameters possible, And I also like the 10 by 10 because, you're never really out of it. You know, in a 5 by 5, if it's August and you're, like, your record is terrible if you're doing head-to-head, you're not coming back. But in Roto, you could always, drop a guy over here. Like, maybe say you're, 38 steals away from the next guy. Well, you're not going to worry about steals anymore. Now you're going to worry about RBIs. Maybe you can drop the guy on top who's leading in RBIs down a peg, get that point differential. You know, maybe you gain a point, he loses a point, and now you're 2 points closer kind of thing. Anyway,
man.
I don't know. But so we usually draft as late as possible. I know a lot of people have already drafted. A lot of people are drafting this weekend also. But we try to wait as long as possible, obviously because of injuries and everything like that. But now I just got word that Mookie Betts is sidelined with a stomach issue. Now, if this is Corona, I am going to raise hell. I'm going down to the CDC. I'm going to Atlanta personally. And I'm going to go figure out the cure because this is not good.
I don't think it's the Corona. From everything that I've read about this impending endemic is that it's not associated necessarily with any stomach issues. It's all mostly head. It's a cough. It is a fever and shortness of breath.
But a flu though, like you can't eat, you're puking, you're
right. Full blown influenza is caused by a completely different virus.
So what you're saying is this is not like the symptoms aren't like a traditional flu. Like you're not
correct. It's from what I understand, it is not like it's far more mild than an influenza. It's more like a cold than it is a flu.
So what the hell's the big deal? This sounds great.
It attacks specifically people with compromised immune systems, and that's who really really hurts and where the deadly aspects of it came from. If you're already immunocompromised,
okay, gotcha. So hopefully,
he is a sick puppy.
Maybe it'll go into the White House or something.
Well, who knows? It has affected some global governments, but we won't get into politics on this show unless they're baseball politics.
Kyle!
But
now
the virus has affected spring training a little bit in the fact that there is far less fan player
interaction
this year,
yeah.
Which is one of the real charms about going to spring training is that you can interact with the players more than you can during the regular season. And it's being limited by a lot of the teams giving autographs or not taking pins from fans. I guess what some teams have started to do are pre-sign baseballs, they can flip them up to fans during the game.
Fan brings his own ball, don't expect that to get signed, especially with your own marker.
Correct.
Not gonna happen.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, but I guess this is the reality of the world that we're now living in, which is, unfortunate. It'll be interesting to see this continues on into April, how it will affect attendance of baseball games. I know, working where we work, it's definitely affected our customers.
Well, I don't want to go into a dome, put it that way. So only open air stadiums. How about that?
Yeah.
But based on what you said, Dr. Paul, it doesn't sound like it's even that bad. So
I'm not a doctor. I only played one on the radio.
It's not a tumor.
All right. Well, yeah, hey, that works for me. I mean, so you're saying Mookie doesn't have the flu?
Okay. Well, right. No, he may have the flu. I don't think he has Corona.
How dare you? Now, I've done a couple mock drafts, and I got to say, this is it's an interesting year, and we're gonna get into some rankings a little bit later. And I think for the next couple weeks, we don't have that much time, but next week we'll do pitchers. Today we're gonna do infielders. I think let's rank the infielders as we see them. Now, you know, as the top sort of five players are all around are more or less the same across most leagues, but you know, there are some variances, and seasons never go the way you expect them to go. There's always some guy who
comes out of nowhere. Right. There's always someone who is unexpectedly going to have a career year,
and
you know, maybe a new rookie comes up, and
Jose Ramirez last year. I mean, that he boned a lot of guys. He was going top five in a lot of leagues, definitely top 10, and he did not finish too well last year. But you know, Jose Ramirez is the kind of guy who has proven himself enough to where maybe he has an off year, but he'll probably bounce back. But it's interesting this year because there is a glut of shortstops.
Well, yeah, there's a glut of shortstops, but I was more impressed my research with the list of third basemen. Third baseman is far more impressive to me, especially since a lot of the shortstops are relatively young. They're not necessarily established. They don't have too much of a track record to go on.
Really? The shortstops? I don't know what shortstops you're looking at, but I'm looking at some pretty salty veterans in here. Okay, well, do you want to just go for it? Start with first base.
Start with first base? Okay.
Yeah, what do you think?
We're doing top five for each position top five overall?
No, let's do top five each position. Let's go
each position. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I have
is number one that really that hard?
Well, I had Freddie Freeman going on with
the MVP.
Max Muncy,
Muncy
behind as far as
no, I'm not talking about. No, I'm talking about Belly, man. Belly's the number one first baseman. Is he not? How is he not? That's 1,000%. Now, I guess I still think of Bellinger as a first baseman, but I guess he almost played equal amount of time. He actually played more time in center field. He actually got the Gold Glove out there, whereas he would have probably gotten it at first base also.
Right.
But I guess he's more of an outfielder now. Yeah.
On most of the lists that I have been looking at, Bellinger is listed as an outfielder.
Well, he's
more
still
than
first base
first
eligible.
Baseman.
So I mean, that's huge. So especially when there's a lot of outfielders out there.
And we're talking about Bellinger 10 by 10. In. Yeah, be able to have him, certainly. I mean,
plug him in at first. That is the way to go, I think. But then he's very versatile as well. Okay, yeah. So he's not even on your first base list. Is that what you're telling me?
Right. I have him more as an outfield choice.
I see.
Bellinger would be. At the end of this, all we can go through are top five picks overall for the entire league. But
your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
If we're talking about baseman,
so Freddie Freeman number one. Okay, that's fair because I got Freddie Freeman number two. So okay. I guess without Bellinger, sure. All right.
Let's
just compare both of ours. Okay, yeah.
Freeman, Muncy, Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Josh Bell was a great surprise for me last year, coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, he killed it.
Hopefully he can have a similar year this year. Be really great.
He killed it last year. Yeah, that is true.
Matt Olson here in Oakland.
Yeah. How many? That's like seven now. How many? What?
Matt
Olson made my top five, but he's not.
I mean,
even,
it's all you know.
He's
it's
not
all
even
right
in
there.
Your
I
top
mean,
five without Bellinger. That's surprising. Okay, but
this is
why we're doing
right
this.
Right there. Yeah. Five and six. I mean, some of these players they found so close that it's like really hard to choose. I haven't gone through any mock drafts as of yet, so I haven't looked at what the
computers
are saying. I have my own research, my own thing, looking at the numbers myself. Looking at some of the other expert evaluations, these are the lists that I came
Goldschmidt
up with.
Made your top five. Interesting. Okay. All right. Now, you know, 5 years ago, 100%, he probably number one.
Yeah, and but, he definitely had a down year this past year. I think that it's possible that there'll be a little bit of a bounce back this year. I mean, he's a great player.
All right. I got Bellinger number one, obviously. Freddie Freeman number two. You know, I'm going to put Rizzo at number three. You know, he wasn't super flashy, but he had a great season last
solid
year.
Solid, for sure.
Yeah, and he always does. And he gets hit by the ball a lot, so which is scary, but he's on base a lot, which means his runs go up pretty high. Anyway, I'm still banking on him to hit like 280, 285 and be the cornerstone of that lineup. Plus, he gets all the, you know, he's a relatively healthy guy. I got Matt Olson four. You know, I mean, I know that's a bit controversial, but... I think it's good. I don't have Muncy on my first base list, although
I
guess...
You picked Bellinger, but...
I have Muncy at second base, because honestly, I'd rather plug him in there, because it's a weaker... But we'll get into that a little bit later. Right. So and then Pete Alonso, number five. Now, there is a... It's not just a possibility, it's almost a guarantee that he will regress a little bit from his insane rookie season, where he broke the all-time rookie home run record.
And it's also, then again, he may not...
Well, that's true. But, you know, a lot of it depends on the ball. Of course, if we get the 2019 ball or the 2017 ball, then, yeah, I bet Pete Alonso could hit another 40 to 50 home runs. But I don't see his average really going up above 255, 260. But even if it doesn't, that's still a top five first baseman, 100%. RBIs and home runs right there, you're going to kill it with him. Okay. Goldschmidt maybe would have been on there. Maybe he could even take Olsen's spot, but this is assuming that Goldschmidt's projected batting average of 262 is accurate. If he's closer to like 280, then he definitely makes the top five. It's also hard not to have Muncy in there, but you know, again, with a similar slash line to Olsen, he had fewer home runs than Olsen. Muncy did, although Muncy is very consistent, right?
Right.
He had 35 and 35.
Certainly has been since he put on the Dodger Blue.
Yeah. Now, Zips has the top five going Bellinger, Freeman, Rizzo, Muncy, Alonso, with Olsen coming in sixth. But then if you look at the Steamer projections for first baseman, we're looking, it's a little bit different. We're looking Bellinger, Freeman, Rizzo, Olsen, Goldschmidt, and then Alonso right after that. Now, they have, it's, you know, they're, it's negligible, I guess, in a sense, but I think either way, those guys will fit in pretty good. Josh Bell hasn't really made it too far up in a lot of projections, so he might be a nice sleeper option. Not even really a sleeper, but a nice high-value option.
Yeah.
A little bit later on in draft, so you might even, say you're like a seventh or eighth in the draft, and you don't have a first baseman in your first two picks, you might even just wait a couple rounds. Because it seems like everybody else is probably those top five, top six guys are going to go out. Now, you don't want to have to be in a position where you might have to take a Joey Votto, even though I love the guy. He's obviously been declining a little bit. I mean, he's 38 years old, right?
Yeah, he's getting up there in the age.
Now, I'm curious to see if Encarnacion is going to be first base eligible. He might be in some leagues, might not be in other leagues. That's always interesting. Of course, you have Carlos Santana, Rhys Hoskins. I think our top fives are pretty much about the same there.
Yeah, there's a little bit of variations, but we're so many different factors that you can look at this and make a choice. Is there a wrong choice? Is there a right choice when we're talking about the top five? Maybe not.
There's a lot of
value. There's a lot of good choices there,
right?
And I think, you know, I mean, just if you do it right, you'll get some really good value out of any of the top five, six players, for sure. Probably even a little bit deeper than that, I think.
Yeah, it is. Steamer has Pete Alonso projected at 44 home runs. And that's, I mean, for a projection, that's insane. Cody Bellinger is projected at 42, which, again, for a projection is very high.
It is.
Which is great, because they're usually very conservative.
Usually based on past record. Alonso only has the 1 year. Bellinger has a little bit more. I'd have a little bit more faith in that Bellinger at 42 projection than I did with Alonso with only the 1 year to go on.
But you're going to have to buy Bellinger a lot higher than you will Alonso. Alonso might even go in the second or third round, whereas Bellinger is going to go top five. All possible,
especially since he can you can plug him in outfield.
Not even just top five first baseman, top five in all of the draft. Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So value is always tricky. Now, when you're in like a 10 or 12 team league, you can get a lot more bang for your buck. You're talking about a 15 team league, though. You know, if you're first, second, third, or fourth, you're waiting 28 spots before you're going to get your second pick, and that's pretty brutal.
Right.
Now, this is always a big debate.
Is it better to be at number one, two, or somewhere in the five, six picks?
And two out of the 3 years, now I'm a three-time champion in this league, but I'd say two out of the 3 years, I was around in the middle. I was like sixth, and I was like seventh or eighth in like a 11-team league, I think it was back then, 12-team maybe, 10, 11, anyway. And I won. And I won once also being last. I've never won with first pick. I've never won with second pick. I've never won with top three pick. And I don't like the third pick. I don't like that at all. I figure if you get the first pick, you keep it. Now, most leagues do a random draft order, and then you get to pick your spot based on that, which I kind of like, but we don't do that. First, you got to have first. But if you don't have first, I don't know if it's worth second or third. I mean, do you go Yelich? Do you go Belly? Do you go Mookie? Acuna? Trout might go two this year for a lot of leagues. Acuna is getting a lot of love.
Yeah.
I don't like the pressure. I don't like the I pick and then I don't pick for 29 more, you know, spots.
Yeah.
Like, that's brutal.
That is definitely, I think, the worst part about being in that first pick slot is your second pick comes so late.
Right. And then you might make a snap decision on a pitcher if pitchers are going, or you know, an infielder, you don't really want to go outfielder that early, but maybe you do, especially if it's...
Depends on what outfielder is available,
All right, let's go to second base.
Second base definitely, again, has a lot of young talent that is up and coming. One big asterisk. It shows up. Jose Altuve has been a very solid pick for the last few years. I know that 1 year that you picked him up, it didn't work out so much, but...
After they got caught internally. Yeah. The year after his MVP season, yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know...
Screw me.
So it's hard this year to really evaluate the Astros hitters because don't know how much that, you know, knowing what pitch was coming, like, really affected those numbers. We're going to have...
Well, we broke down the strikeout numbers last week.
We did.
Last episode, and they're damning, to say the least. But it's not even just that, I don't think. It's not just... how much were they helped and how much now will they not be helped? I think it's also a lot of mental issues, man. I mean, they're going to be on a tour of hell.
Yeah, they're going to be...
Road game is going to be miserable until at least the All-Star break.
Yeah, and maybe certainly any first visit to a new stadium is going to be pretty raucous.
It was like when Dylan joined the band. And they toured Europe, and they got booed every single show. They got booed every single show. And it messes with your mind. And Levon had to quit. Levon left the band and went down south and worked on an oil rig just to clear his head. Because it's one thing to play great music that you know is great, but when nobody else thinks it's great, like, it's brutal. It's a brutal thing to do to just go around parading your wares and getting zero love in return, which is what's going to happen to them, or at least I hope that's what's going to happen. I mean, it's hard to scream for 3 hours straight, but I'm going to try my best.
All right. Well, if you don't come back hoarse from that game, I'm going
to
be
March 30th, come to the Coliseum if you're in the Bay Area. Come show your support, not just for the A's, but against the Astros. It should be good. Yes. But no, but aside from that, aside from them, having to deal with the stress and play in a stadium where not just they have the disadvantage of being on the road, but right. they have to listen to all the vitriol and hate coming at them. It's they're going to get hit.
Yeah.
And we don't know how this is going to affect them. Yeah, they're going to get hit. It might not be every game. It might not be every week.
But it's going to be in the back of
every single one of them.
The back of their mind
is going to get hit.
They're going to
So and maybe it's going to hit a finger bone. Maybe it's going to tweak their back a weird way. I mean, these guys are going to be out at least, let's say, a dozen games each, here and there, right?
Yeah, and they did have some issues with injuries last year, but with a lot of them being out for various reasons. But,
right. So this kind of affects me, especially with Altuve, although Altuve is on my never draft list anyway, even before all this stuff, because like you said, he boned me hard in 2018. That being said, I got Gleyber Torres number one.
Gleyber Torres would definitely be a good pick.
Now, a lot of people have Albies number one.
Albies.
And that's fine, too.
DJ LeMahieu is right up there, too.
Okay, wait, hold on. Wait a second. Let me hear your top five. Because I don't think DJ LeMahieu is that high up, but let's hear it.
Well, I got Ozzy Albies.
Number one?
Ketel Marte, Altuve, LeMahieu, I think number five, just going on maybe a dark horse, I was surprised to find on the list, Moustakas is rising up there in value as well.
He's got the potential.
He's in a hitter friendly park this year with Cincinnati, and there may be some late round value for sure on him. Then Calvin Biggio is also on my list as a potential rookie last year, son of a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I guess it's Calvin, not Calvin, but
it's definitely not Calvin. No,
yeah,
I was saying Kavan, but I guess it's Calvin.
Yeah,
Kavan sounds cooler, but what do I know?
Again, there's
Torres or Albies number one?
Albies.
Okay, yeah, and Altuve makes your top five.
Altuve does make my top five with an asterisk. Because it's just there's so many unknowns how he's going to be affected by, the
everything.
Whole fallout from the scandal.
Well, my whole thing with Altuve is sure, yeah, if he can hit over 300, that's great. His power numbers are not he can't sustain that, and he hasn't really. And his steals go down every year, like by a lot. So
is that effective really of him, or is that of just the nature of the game and just people
stealing? I don't care. Either way, he's not stealing as much, and that was always one of his big assets, was that he would hit for average, he would have some power, but he would get a lot of steals. Now he hits for average, has some power, and really maybe 10, maybe 12 steals on the year. I'd be surprised if he goes over 10, honestly.
I see.
And I'd be surprised if he has more than 28 home runs. And 28 home runs for a second baseman is great. But when you're talking about Gleyber Torres, Albies, Marte, as you said, Muncy, number five. So actually, that was my list. Torres, Albies, Marte, Muncy. And number five, speaking of dark horses, although he's not really that dark, is Keston Hira. I think Keston Hira is going to have a monster year. He's still playing in that baby park, as Puig says. In Milwaukee, he hit for average, he hit for power, he hit for oppo power as much as he did for pull power last year. I mean, his oppo strength is insane.
A lot of home runs last year. I mean, Minnesota, up and down that Minnesota lineup is a lot of power.
He had it over 90 mile per hour off the bat speed, batted ball speed. I mean, that's real power. That's not fake power.
Yeah.
You know, so I think he's going to be great. Now, of course, an honorable mention definitely goes to Javi Baez, who I don't really like, but, the guy keeps proving that he's actually pretty good.
Baez is a shortstop, though.
Yeah, but he's second base eligible. Yeah. So,
because one of the nice things about Baez is that you can plug him into several different infield
positions. Baez is a weird guy. Like, I never think, I'm like, this guy's not real. And then, he has a great season.
Well,
and he has a great season again. I'm like, okay, all right. Jeff McNeil, of course, on there for average as well. If you're waiting for second baseman and you need average and Jeff McNeil's still there, he's going to be a great, you know, fifth round pick or so, maybe even later, 6-7. A lot of guys sleep on McNeil. And McNeil is outfield, third, second. I mean, he might even be first eligible as well. That guy really almost saved my season last year. He did everything I needed him to do, essentially. Of course, DJ LeMahieu, and I guess Altuve, I'll give an honorable mention, just because he has been pretty consistent, at least with the average, throughout his whole career. But yeah, the injury concerns with him and the lack of steals, and if the ball is different this year, I just don't really see him being a top five anymore, honestly. I don't know. I could be wrong. Send your hate mail to me, but I don't think anybody's not hating the Astros right now.
Is the ball going to be different this year? I thought there was nothing wrong with the ball last year.
Yeah, according to the official MLB statement, yeah, there was nothing different. And they have no control over it, which is silly. I don't know. Part of me would like to see the ball be the same. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't want it to be a dead ball, but I don't want it to be a ping pong either. You know, I don't know. So I guess ours are similar, except for you have a little bit more love for Moustakas. But I think you're right. Maybe in that environment, Moose might have a pretty crazy year. But when you're looking at second baseman, sometimes you kind of want some steals there, you know. Yeah. And Ketel Marte, can he do it again? Maybe. Maybe not. But if he can, he's going to be a steal as well. He had a monster year last year.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Diamondbacks overall. They're certainly in some areas improved, but
yeah, you think so?
Well, in pitching, they have a little bit more pitching than they did last year. That rising rodeo star, but we can get into that later.
Yeah. What's up with that? I thought, you're talking about Mason Saunders, I'm assuming. Now, I thought that they would have very detailed, like, you know, language, specific language in his contracts pertaining to extracurricular activities. Now, I guess I'm wrong, but is that a good thing to let your star pitcher, although, let's be honest, his road splits last year were abysmal. He was terrible on the road. And so if he's going to be pitching there, it might not be a good sign to call him an ace anymore. Generous, but would you allow a guy like that to go rope calves and bucking Broncos? And
well, I think he's just roping calves. I don't think he's doing it from a horse, right?
I know his Broncos aren't bucking, but
I mean, he's not. I mean, I think, but because in his hometown where he lives in the off season is a ranch.
Right.
And he rides a horse on a daily basis, so there probably was an exception made for him being able to ride horses for ranching duties, you know, during the off season. But I don't think the intention was for him to be competing in a rodeo. Now
he's been doing it for years,
apparently, and the Diamondbacks were unaware, apparently, that he was competing in rodeos while he was with the Giants.
Right. So did they put the kibosh on that right away, or,
you know? I'm not privy
to that information. Now, yeah. I'm no cowboy, but I have ridden a few horses in my life. Yeah. And, I mean, when you're on the back of a horse, man, like, even if it's the most docile, tame horse, that is still, like, 1,100 pounds of muscle that could do whatever it wants with you. Yeah. And now Bumgarner is a little bit bigger than me. I grant that. Sure. But even anybody still, gets kicked off a horse.
He's still outweighed by a good
If you fall off that times. Horse, yeah. I'm coming. Come on, you're 6 feet off the ground. It's going to hurt. You're going to put your arm out first to break your fall. Now, we all know Christopher Reeve was a great equestrian rider, right?
Yeah.
He probably had a really expensive, super cool horse. That didn't work out too well for him.
No, it didn't. And you know what Christopher Reeve is doing with the jumping and all of that is
I know.
Far more dangerous than
roping
a calf.
Swinging a lasso over your head whilst gripping a horse with your legs and reeling it in. Now, I'm saying all this, but actually, I think there may be some virtue in this. Okay, so we're always talking about these monosport injuries and why do these guys... Now, I have had that theory for a long time. It seems like the biggest guys get hurt the most, the Stantons, the Judges of the world.
Right, they specialize in one thing.
Yeah, but I was thinking that these guys work out too much and they have too many muscles to pull and bend and twist. But it's also the monosport culture thing. Like, if you just shoot jumpers all day, your elbow is going to get messed up over time, right? If you're a basketball player.
And especially if you do something different with just that motion.
So that cross training.
Yeah, using those muscles in different ways. Yeah. And it very well could be.
Maybe it's actually a better thing.
As we've seen, also that really the only issues that have arisen from Madison Bumgarner came off one of them four-wheeled mechanical horses.
That's basically what I'm getting at. He's been a pretty strong workhorse his whole career. He hasn't really been out of with any real injuries pertaining to sports in that sense. So maybe the sense that he's been doing this for years is actually a good thing. Now, obviously on the cover, it doesn't seem good. It seems like, why are you risking another, payday? I don't know. What was he, like 15 mil a year?
Something like that.
Maybe closer to 18.
It's good to be the ball player, no matter what. But
all right, that's enough. Let's go to third base.
Third base. Like I said earlier, I had the most difficulty coming up with just a top five because to me, this list was the most impressive.
You think it's more impressive than the shortstop list?
I do. I mean, there's some great players with the shortstops, but just the level of consistency and power and
okay, what do you got? Leave me hanging. Don't bury the lead.
So I got
number one.
Number one is Rendon.
Really? Rendon.
Wow.
I'm glad we're doing this because I am shocked.
Really bunched up in there. Nolan Arenado. There's Matt.
Arenado?
Arenado.
How dare you?
How do you sleep at night?
I don't. I really don't. Matt Chapman.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, yeah. He's a stud.
Torn between Josh Donaldson and Justin Turner and
looking at your 2016 stat line or what are you looking
then,
at
then
over
there's
there?
Alex Bregman as well with one of those asterisks probably go higher. I mean he's
I know it
and then
it
you
me.
Throw in Jose Ramirez who had a down year,
right?
There's Manny Machado out there.
Sure.
There's
I have high hopes for Machado this year. I think Machado's going to have a big bounce back year, and I think he's going to be a huge steal for whoever gets him late in the draft.
I think so, too. I mean, it's just this list of players is just like...
He had a lot of bad luck last year.
Amazing, yeah.
And I don't think
being
that
on the Padres doesn't help, but... And when his rookie counterpart... over a shortstop went down with injury, his numbers dropped a little bit too. He didn't have that protection in the lineup.
Right. Yeah. I mean, his defense suffered a little bit last year, but I mean, arguably he's a lot more consistent than a Josh Donaldson, than even a Chris Bryant lately. I don't know. So let me see. What does Steamer have? 1, 2, 3, 4. Steamer has him number 9 overall. Zips has him number 10 for all third basemen. 10.
Yeah.
So if you're, in a 12-team league even, or hell, even a 10-team league, for some people, you could just wait, I feel like, and let everybody else take Devers and Bryant and Donaldson ahead of him, and then just go ahead and take Machado and stock up your outfield and your other corners. I don't know. Now, I have... And the general consensus is that Bregman is still number one. But I love Arenado. I love him. I love this guy. This guy is a beast. He puts up numbers. He rarely gets hurt. maybe I'm just afraid to say he never gets hurt, but he's built for it better than I think Bregman is. And I think Bregman, he's done amazing things for what he's done with like his stature, I guess. But he has a lot of Crawford box home runs, man, and he pulls that ball a lot. And I don't know if over time that's going to age well. Now, I have to still put him in my top five, as much as it pains me to, you know, just because, I mean, he has been very productive.
And consistent. But
how much of that was...
Knowing what was coming.
Yeah. And, again, the injury were scary. The injury fears are very valid, you know? I'm not necessarily buying into the fact that they're all going to have a slump year because they're not cheating anymore.
No,
I think they've been talked to sternly the last couple years by MLB, and I think that, you know, they've kind of the jig was up essentially, which is maybe why they had to go to buzzers and all that stuff. But neither here nor there. I don't think his numbers will drop off dramatically just because he is so competitive and he is really, really into the game. But I just don't see him as a number one. So I have Arenado number one. I have Chapman number two.
Hmm.
Chapman is just going to be insane this year. I have Bregman three. I have Jose Ramirez four, which is a bit controversial. And I have Rendon five. Because Rendon, you know, he's good, but he's not, like, amazing. Now, he's going to have a lot more protection in that lineup where he's at now.
The Ohtani and Trout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Ohtani, Trout, Upton, maybe even Pujols. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Now, if Jock Peterson was in there, it'd be even better. But I think he'll have a great year. But yeah, I don't know about top five. He's in the top five. Steamer has Josh Donaldson at number four and Rendon number two, with Ramirez number five and Arenado six. I don't know how that's possible. A lot of people like Devers, and a lot of people have Devers in their top five, and that might not be the craziest thing. I mean, the guy showed he can hit for average. He can obviously hit for power. He's going to probably be the number two hitter on that lineup now. But yeah. Attendee one, Devers probably two. He's probably going to take over Mookie's spot, I would imagine.
Yeah, maybe. Probably. I mean, I don't know. Only, you know, it's hard to tell in just spring training.
Yeah.
And there's so many moving parts at this point.
So he's going to get a lot of RBIs. He's going to get a lot of runs. And if he can maintain that pace, I would put him over Donaldson right now, honestly, too. Now, Chris Bryant, you got to worry about the shoulder, obviously. Yoan Moncada and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., two guys with huge ceilings. And we know enough about Moncada to know that he'll be probably where he's at now. But we don't know that much about Vladdy. I mean, obviously, we know he was a huge stud in AAA. But
right.
In terms of how he's going to be in a full season...
We'll see.
No, his exit velocity is through the roof. I think he averages like over 93. So even like infield ground balls like go for hits a lot of the time.
Yeah.
He doesn't elevate the ball
so
a lot.
Hard, yeah.
He just doesn't elevate. He doesn't get under as much as he could. Now, I don't know if it's a good thing to teach him how to do the, you know, launch angle and all that stuff if he doesn't really need to. He's a natural hitter, and he's figuring out ways to get the ball over the fence anyway just by smashing it.
Right. I mean, you put a good swing on the ball, and it's going to do good things.
Right. Now, when you're talking about a guy like Chris Bryant or even Moncada or Eugenio Suarez, around that area, around that ADP, I'm taking Justin Turner.
Yeah.
You know, Turner is the kind of guy that he's not that flashy. You know, he doesn't put up gaudy numbers, but he puts up really good numbers.
He's a scary guy to have come up, you know, with any people on.
And,
you know,
yeah.
He's not the guy you want to see in the on-deck circle.
Definitely not. And if he's hitting third, he's going to be cleaning up a lot of those bases.
Because
Mookie's going to be probably hitting second, maybe leadoff.
I don't know.
See, that also affects Mookie's fantasy to me also. If he's leadoff only, I don't know if he goes top five anymore. I don't know. Definitely top eight, let's say. But if he's leadoff only, I don't know. I don't know if he is going to be.
Because of the RBI potential?
Yeah, 100%. Now, you know, the Dodgers lineup is so stacked that even their 7-8-9 guys are probably going to, 7-8 guys are going to be probably getting on anyway also. So there will be that potential. So maybe he'll actually have a more productive year than any other leadoff guy in history, yeah. Which is definitely possible. But I think he's more comfortable at two. I don't know. Could be wrong.
Could be. Time will tell. What do you think? Do you have any opinion about this kid from the Mets, Jeff McNeil?
Yeah, I just talked about him. Yeah. I said he's great. His,
yeah.
He's great. He almost saved my season. Yeah. The guy's first, second, third, outfield. Like, he's everything eligible. And he hits for, right. I mean, he hits for average. And he's got some pop in his bat. But that's what I was saying. Like, if you want to hold off on second baseman and get Jeff McNeil in the later rounds, six, seven rounds or something, that's a great, especially if you need the average. If you sell out on power, you know, the Pete Alonzos of the world, Encarnaciones, you need a little average. Jeff McNeil's your guy. And he doesn't have this sort of name cachet like DJ LeMahieu, of course, because he's playing in the other New York team.
Right.
And they hit for pretty much a similar average, I would say, you know. And Jeff McNeil's versatility for fantasy purposes, I think, make him even stronger than LeMahieu, personally. But, you know, again, this is what we talk about. Now, shortstop.
Shortstop. Yeah, so this was your category. You know, I mean,
this is everybody's category.
So I mean, this is I had Baez here, number one. I think because of his eligibility for all those other positions.
What
and,
is it? Oh.
I mean, you yeah. think
is he second? Year
I had him and first. I think really? he might be outfield as well. I could plug him into like four different slots when I had him. So like he was when I had to move someone in, I can move him to so many other different and keep him in my lineup.
He's
and
like a Jeff McNeil.
Always put up solid numbers, and he has that track.
You had him
record.
Last year.
I think it was last year. It's the year before, and it was a tremendous benefit because I never had to really take him out. He was, I think, injured for a couple of weeks, but that became an issue. But I had a couple other strong people that I could put in place. But I could move him around in my lineup. Never really take him out when I needed to alter it a little bit.
It's funny, man. He's going down the list for Zips and Steamer. Zips has him at 11th overall for shortstop. Wow. Steamer has him at 14.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I didn't, you know, I just.
No, I get it. I get I mean, it. He passes the smell
but,
test.
But,
like, he's been doing it.
You know, I mean, when and it's a tough choice to make when you're talking about, you know, some of the other guys here. You know, Trevor Story, Francisco Lindor.
Yeah. I mean, it's Lindor and Story's game.
Simeon.
Let's be honest.
Well,
Simeon in real life. 100%, but for fantasy, I don't know.
You know, and then I had Gleyber Torres listed under the shortstop.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because
Didi's gone, so he may be playing
the majority. Yeah, and you know, I mean, it just still, you know, a lot of numbers. And then, of course, I brought him up briefly. Of course, Fernando Tatis
Jr.
100%. He's a rookie, but man, what a rookie year! If he hadn't have been injured for as long as he was, his the rookie of the year candidacy might have been different.
Well, he also plays in the same league as Pete Alonso, so
right. Who knows how much closer he would have been to Alonso in terms of votes had he played the whole year healthy.
Right.
I'm
excited.
It might have affected the Padres' overall year. They may have finished better than completely dead last year.
Well, I'm sure they'll finish better than the Giants this year, so I don't think... Now, I have Fernando Tatis in my number five spot with sort of a bit of an asterisk next to Xander Bogaerts, because I think Bogaerts has proven himself to hit for average and he found a lot of pop last year. I don't think anybody expected him to have that, but as opposed to a Tatis Jr. who he proved himself very, very worthy, but you know, the back issues and his his potential to be injured again. Still keep him in my top five. It's like 5.5, I want to say. But I'm taking Lindor, Story, Turner, and I hate to admit Correa.
Yeah, well, Correa.
Before those, before the...
Correa again and asterisk. Could, you know, it's...
I could even put Bogarts instead of Correa and maybe put Correa 5 with Tatis Jr. But either way, you know, and when we talked about Correa's strikeouts plummeting that year... And
yeah, well,
strikeout
he knows
rate
what's
has
coming.
Gone up dramatically since then, and obviously he has been injury prone his whole career. There is some worrying concern there, but you know, he seems 100% healthy this year, and he's got a chip on his shoulder. So I got to put him in the top five. Even
I mean,
though
yeah,
I'm
mean,
a little worried.
Yeah, still, I mean, yeah, he's right there for me too, but dropped him just because there's so many good choices out there that don't have that asterisk of like, well, you knew what was coming. So what, you know, is
this is one of the few years in memory where you could pick up two shortstops. And in fact, you maybe should and just put one in utility because
or
there's
for
that
trade
good.
Bait. Yeah.
They're that good. Now, Fernando Tatis, it is worth mentioning, had a 410 BABIP, which is seems very unstable.
Remind us again what BABIP is.
Batting average and balls in play.
Okay.
So 410 is not sustainable. You know, a lot of that is poor defense. A lot of that is luck. He kind of had the opposite effect of what Machado had with very bad luck. So you have to expect a bit of regression. Anytime a BABIP is that high, you know the guy's going to come down back to earth next year. He just got really lucky. Now, maybe he can have like a 370 or so, but even then, you know. So that concerns me a little bit, obviously. And his 31.9% home run to fly ball ratio as well. That's a bit alarming because, again, that's just not sustainable.
Especially in,
unless he's otherworldly.
And a place like Petco is one of those very pitcher-friendly parks.
It is. It's not as pitcher-friendly as it used to be, but it is still considered a pitcher-friendly part. Yeah. Now, I would love to see Corey Seager reach elite status again for fantasy. But, of course, his health always remains an issue. And Marcus Semien, as you said, he's proved to be a top 10 shortstop, definitely. I'm just still not sold on him being a top 5 for fantasy purposes. And, you know, Bo Bichette deserves a very long look. As well, after proving himself to be, you know, not just hit for power, but to be very selective and to hit all sides of the field. You know, he's kind of like a Keston Hira in that he can do it all.
Again, I'm loving these generational players coming in. I mean, they made such an impact in the game last year. I hope that they continue success, all three of them. Biggio, Bichette, and
Guerrero. Yeah.
I mean, just phenomenal.
I just
love to see it.
And you're going to hear it here first. I'm pretty sure Bichette is going to be the better out of all the three. I really do.
Right.
I mean, obviously, Guerrero's all the hype, and his hit tool numbers are, I think, like literally unprecedented. There's nobody that had a better hit tool score or number from scouts in minor leagues ever. Like, nobody's had a better one. So Guerrero's potential is higher, but I think what Bichette has shown us is that he's like ready now, and he might just be a monster. He might be better than the Story. I don't know.
We'll reconvene in 10 years and see if you're right.
And don't forget, Lindor didn't start the season. You know, I drafted him last year knowing he wasn't going to start the season, and he ended up doing very well. But you know, his injury concerns are present, and hopefully not a clear danger as well, but could be. So Story and Lindor go 1-2 for most people. It's hard for me to not pick Lindor number one if I had the choice, but the Coors factor and Story just seems to actually be getting better is maybe enough to push me over to Story.
Yeah, this is Story's what now, fourth year in the league?
I think this would be his fifth.
So it's fifth?
Four and a half. He came up in like halfway through 15, I believe. Or was it 16? I don't know. It was one of the years that I won because I got it before anybody else did, like midway through the season. and he powered me to victory. Now, have you seen the MLB? Now, obviously, there's going to be some new rules. We're going to change gears here a little bit. MLB is banning excessive grip substances. Have you seen this?
For pitchers? I did see a little bit about that. But
now, so it's a little strange because I guess sort of like it's been sort of unofficially okay to have some sort of foreign substance. Like everybody has a little pine tar, I guess. That's kind of like what they're making it seem like. Like a little is okay, but they're cracking down on excessive substances. Now we saw the Angels, the Angels clubhouse guy of like 30 something years get fired this week,
right,
for supplying, supposedly or allegedly supplying, substances to pitchers. We don't know all the details there, but that does.
But what is it, what is this substance in question? What does it actually do? What is the advantage that it?
Well, it's no, you know, to improve grip, you know. And so commonly it's
beyond
what guys
just
use.
the resin bag in the back of every mat.
Well, right. But a lot of guys apparently, and I guess this is like everybody knows, and it's kind of an okay thing as long as it's not too much, use a clear sunscreen on their arm that they mix and make like a little concoction with the resin. And then I guess that's been like a very common thing for maybe ever.
Just to make it a little bit stickier. So
yeah, a little tacky.
Comes,
you know,
off of their fingers.
Especially if you're playing like in a very low humidity climate like Colorado, Arizona. You know, I mean, these places, there's no density in the air. You know, you might need a little something else. Now, pine tar obviously has been used forever. And of course, we all remember Pineda in 2014. Getting ejected for having all that pine tar on his neck. I mean, that was just ridiculous. And yeah. I think that's what they're talking about. I think they're talking about excessive, you know, gross use and abuse of foreign substances. But anyway, MLB is putting pitchers and pitching coaches, bullpen catchers on notice that, yeah, it's their ass on the line if they're caught engaging in this behavior. Trevor Bauer, who has been coming out on everything recently.
He seems very vocal.
And I got to admit, I mean, I'm kind of liking everything that this guy's been saying, or at least most of what he's been saying, because he's not afraid to rally out against him. I used to think he was a bit of a ham, but, you know, I kind of appreciate his honesty nowadays. Oh, who just got carted off the field? What was that?
Looked like a coach.
Sorry, I just saw Dodger Blue in a cart, and that freaked me out. Trevor Bauer has accused the Astros with using grip substances to increase the spin rate on their pitches. And he also famously has carried a feud with Gerrit Cole since his freshman year at UCLA for doing stuff like this. It's pretty funny, man. Bauer recently told Real Sports, you know, Brian Gumbel on HBO, that 70% of pitchers use substances on the baseball that technically are illegal, and that, quote, the Astros are super advanced analytically and they know how to weaponize it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Weaponized grip substance.
But I like that that he and Cole have had a feud since freshman year in college.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Pretty funny. Yeah.
Now Cole obviously is maybe been the better of the two pitchers, but I don't know, he got shelled and shellacked in spring training. We'll see.
Spring training.
But that's what we were talking about before. Like, how is he going to handle the first time he gets destroyed, you know? First time he's a blow-up game by the media.
In New York, especially. Right. At home, yeah.
Right. Yeah. It'll be pretty interesting to see. Now, there's going to be obviously a lot of changes this year. But before we get into the rest of the changes, you were talking about TV rights, and there is a battle going on.
Yeah, there is. There's a battle. Of course, it's always about money. But the TV rights and specifically streaming rights by YouTube versus Sinclair Media. YouTube has dropped Sinclair-owned Fox stations and the YES Network, which is Yankees Entertainment System, which affects in total 15 major league ball clubs across the country.
You're saying YouTube dropped?
Oh, right. Well,
or they got dropped.
Her wording was different depending on the article that I read, but I believe that it was YouTube ultimately that said no to Sinclair because of the money that Sinclair was asking for the rights to stream the games off of their
YouTube
their
had like
facilities.
Like one game a week or something. They had like a YouTube stream game of the week,
right? And they're a big sponsor of the World Series and
right,
the playoffs
true.
As well.
Yeah,
YouTube
TV and all that.
Now, what this? I mean, it affects 15 teams. I mean, including New York and LA. And LA is having a completely different dispute, but that's between Time Warner.
Right. It's no secret that, you know, the largest media market on Earth and one of the biggest fan bases on Earth can't even watch their own team's games.
Only 30% of LA, 30% of LA residents are able to watch Dodgers games on TV.
More than two-thirds cannot even watch their home team.
And in some areas of LA, Time Warner Cable, which carries the Dodgers games, is not even available in the market. So even if they wanted to, they couldn't switch.
And they can't buy the MLB streaming subscription because it's an in-market game. So I'm actually better off as a Dodger fan living in San Francisco, which I am, because I can watch every Dodgers game,
except
so long as
they're not
playing,
playing
the Giants or the A's, which is absurd.
The A's is not as much as a concern because that happens so infrequently, ultimately.
Well, every couple of years, but
every couple of years, but
they play the Giants more than they play anybody else.
19 games a year against the Giants,
right?
And I know as a Giants fan, those are the games that I'm most interested in because it's the Dodgers. It's they're usually the most intense games played in April or September. Those games are the best games to watch and nearly always have a playoff atmosphere no matter how good or bad the teams are in that particular year.
Even if the Dodgers win 100 games and the Giants lose 100 games,
those
games are still very
the most entertaining. Yeah. As a Giants or a Dodger fan, they're the most entertaining games to watch.
Now, I thought, I remember at the end of last season, the 2019 season, it was released, there was a few news articles released that the MLB.TV, their streaming subscription service that I've had for over a decade now, was going to this year finally include in-market games. And I was elated. I was like, this is great. Finally, it's worth the $130 price tag.
Right.
You know, because that's
then
huge.
Then you can watch all of the games.
Right, because I choose not to pay for cable TV.
Right.
I choose not to do that. And then I'm punished, even though I support MLB financially, by not having TV still. It's like, you're trying to promote this streaming service to people that don't have TV, but then when they want to watch the home games, they can't? It's absurd.
Yeah. It should be
illegal, honestly. I don't see why.
It is. It's utterly ridiculous, and ultimately is one of the main reasons why I do pay for that cable, so that I can watch the Giants games on TV. I live in San Francisco. I am a Giants fan. If I could just pay MLB to watch the Giants game on my phone, which would be more convenient, I'd probably be able to watch more than I already do.
The whole thing, and this is what Trevor Bauer has been rallying against, is that MLB claims to want to appeal to a younger generation, yet everything in their power to prevent the younger generation from patronizing and watching their games.
Not just appealing to the younger fan, any fan. I mean, at this point, half the country, literally half the country, has zero access to baseball on TV.
Yeah.
Because they're either
not in
a local market or their cable companies are not paying for the service or for the broadcast from the
Okay, so now I'm starting to see why they want more commercials in the middle of their games, because baseball is not very lucrative, because it's not like football. There's no timeouts. When there are timeouts, you can't cut to commercial, right? So, that's absurd. They're trying to make all that money at the expense of viewers.
They're complaining about declining ratings. Well, the ratings would go up if it was easier to watch these games that I want to watch.
Yeah, help me help you, MLB, Manfred. They should just have Trevor Bauer be the commissioner at this point, honestly. The guy's a little crazy, but I mean, you know, he actually understands.
It might be a better choice than Jose Canseco, but that's a whole other
story. Is he up for the job?
You didn't see that? He came out as either this past week or the week before. He said, Jose Canseco said, I should be commissioner.
You suck, McBain!
He does kind of look like McBain. Wow, Jose Canseco. Well, okay.
One too many fly balls off the head, maybe. We'll see.
I wouldn't go that far. But let's release the tapes. Let there be like MLB highlights, you know, videos. Like, let people share these videos. This is the modern world. I know baseball is an old game, but then...
Did you see that play that was made the other night? No. Let me show you. Let me send you the highlight. It doesn't work.
You can't. Right. Exactly.
It's really quite sad. There was one posted, I think, just from yesterday. Someone was mic'd up on base, scored... from first base.
Oh, Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman play. Did you see that? Did you hear the audio?
Yeah,
it was.
Chipper Jones was up in the booth. I was watching that game actually because it was on pretty early before work. Chipper Jones was in the booth and they were talking we're not gonna see that. That's okay. Like I get these guys are gonna wear mic packs, but it was really fun. Yeah,
and that was the point. I mean, you get to hear a little bit inside baseball a little bit. And I think the point of having these videos available is that you can see things like that. I know that maybe having mic'd up players 100% of the time is not necessarily a practical thing, but maybe. I mean, I know that there's at least one player that doesn't seem to mind wearing electronics on his body during the game. But, last year's All-Star game, they had a little bit of fun with it. Spring training, they seem to be having a little bit of fun to it. And I ran across a story this week.
Oh, yeah!
Pete Alonso okayed a deal to have a... mic on under or near first base during regular season games.
Real.
to get some of that first base banter going on and recording, whether it be part of the broadcast or not, could be used to put together a little package at the end of the week to, you know, hear some of what they talk about.
You know what, Pete? I apologize for any denigrating comments I made against you. Even though I love you, bro. I had you last year on my team. I almost won. That's amazing. I love that man 10 times more now, because that's pretty incredible. Now, whether or not they're going to ever release that audio, probably not. But like you said, maybe like at the end of the week for like a blooper reel or something. Because, you know, you're going to have to get the consent of every guy who makes it to first base also.
Right. This should be easy enough to do, but...
What's the Mr. Baseball? What's
that? Oh, yeah. You got any naked pictures of your wife? Want some? Yeah. And other such insults. It might be fun.
I like that. Now, there are going to be other rule changes in the 2020 season. You know, this episode is going to go a little long. We had a couple week hiatus there for a little bit, I know.
Mostly we wanted to wait to have actual baseball to be talking about that wasn't just Astros.
Now, and this it brings up a touchy subject, because I am not happy about this next rule change. Mm. And that, of course, is that we're going to be hearkening back to the Barry Bonds era of intentional walks.
the Barry Bonds treatment. Yeah. Intentional walks will be...
What do you mean,
predicted,
Adam? What do you mean?
Making a comeback a little bit?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, you're not alone in your dissatisfaction with this rule change.
Let me break down exactly what we're talking about here after I open this Montucky cold snack. It's a great beer, by the way.
It is very tasty.
Montucky coming out of Montana, making a little craft lager. This stuff is just sweeping California, and I don't mind it. I like this craft lager trend. I like the craft pilsner trend that's going around. We don't need IPAs all year long. We don't need them. All right. I love IPAs, a good IPA. I love a good IPA, but I don't need it.
IPAs were designed for that long, slow trip around the Horn of Africa.
Right. I'm not a limey
from
Brit.
England to India. Right. That's why they're called India Pale Ales.
I like the trend. I don't like the hazy trend. That's for the beer podcast. We'll get into that a little bit later. But yes, Montucky cold snack. Well done. Well done, gentlemen. There were only 29 intentional walks issued all last season.
29?
With a runner on first base. Yeah. There were only 9 issued by all 15 American League teams put together.
Yeah. That's
now, why am I bringing this up? Why am I talking about that there's going to be a huge spike? Now, of course, because we also know that the Astros didn't use any intentional walks, right? They went through, or they had one throughout the whole entire season or something like that. But yeah, 9 for all the American League teams combined. Why are we talking about this? Well, because of course the 3 batter rule.
Yes, coming the 3 batter rule. This is season. Like, if you haven't heard about it, I believe that we talked about it when it was first put on the table, but this is a
hoping
rule
that it wouldn't actually come to fruition, but yes.
This is a rule where that when a relief pitcher comes in, he must face 3 batters before another pitching change can take place. And this was an attempt to speed up the game.
At risk of denigrating the 150-year integrity of the sport and managing the sport.
Major rule change. People have been practicing and playing one way. So the best analogy I saw was this would be like telling Bobby Fischer at a start of a chess tournament that, oh, your king now, instead of moving only one space, can now move 3 spaces.
or has to move
3 spaces. Good luck to you.
Yeah.
More
castling. Yeah.
This is a major rule change that affects the strategy and the way that the game has been played for decades.
100%. It's a totally different game now. I mean, I really don't understand it. I have some quotes here for managers across the game because they are arguably pissed off.
Oh, yeah. No arguably about it. They are.
Yeah. I mean, okay, and again, perhaps hitters won't mind as much, I guess, maybe. No. But that's not why. It's not a half game, right? Like, it's both sides need equal opportunity. And now you're giving batters even more of an advantage. Anyway. So here are some quotes from the managers. We got Bud Black, obviously of the Rockies, says, "A team should be able to do what they want to do with their players." Yeah, that sounds... I can't argue with that. It sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, they're paying them millions of dollars. They
should have full control. At least the manager... Yeah, exactly. You know, the manager is on the hook for when a team does bad. You know, that's... And now he's going to be like, well, yeah, my hands were tied. Joe Maddon said, "You're going to be put into situations that you never, ever wanted to be in, and you worked hard not to be in." And then Tori Lovello says, "It's not going to be as simple as people think." Now, Terry Francona was very eloquent, said, "Look, I think," this is a quote, "MLB has done an unbelievable job. Every time they put rules in, they explain things to us. But this is the one time I cannot get it through my head. They're telling you how to compete on our team. We show up early and we stay late. One of the things we try to do is run our bullpen better than the other team. Sometimes we're more successful than others. We're not infallible. But I think the unintended consequences of this, I just don't think they've thought them through." End quote. Yeah. Like, why are they rushing this? Like, shouldn't they have talked to the managers before? Like, the people who are actually going to be directly affected by this? Is this just like a unilateral decision that Manfred is making? Like, I don't
It certainly seems that way. And I don't know if it's going to be worth the 6 minutes that perhaps
three hours and 7 minutes to 3 hours and 2 minutes. Like, I mean, come on. Nobody's going to feel that.
No.
You're not going to notice that.
No. But you are going to notice when guys get walked intentionally with runners on to try to improve the potential matchup, and then more runs are scored and the game is blown.
And the game is longer.
Also, and the game is longer. It extends the inning. It is, all these things. Yeah.
Joe Maddon, he agrees with you 100%. He said, say you bring in a lefty to face a lefty, and say there's a runner on first base. Now he walks him, and it's first and second, two outs. And it's a horrible matchup with this lefty versus a righty. Do you intentionally walk that dude if there's a lefty on deck to load the bases? Yeah, you might. Of course you might. If it's Trout, you know? So we're going to be seeing these guys, like Trout, get all these walks. Now, if you're in a league that doesn't count walks, which you probably aren't because most people do a 5x5, now we are, so we'll still get those points. You know, all those points are gone. Like, you have to take those at-bats essentially out of Trout's hands, out of Bellinger's hands, out of Yelich's hands.
Right.
Acuna. I mean,
and we want to see the best hitters face the best pitchers.
Yeah. I don't want to go back to the 110 intentional walk season that Barry Bonds had or whatever the hell it was.
No, that was so horrible. All the rubber chickens up on the wall.
Yeah.
It was.
It's funny, but it's not fun.
No. No, it's not fun. And why do we call it the Barry Bonds? Because Barry Bonds famously, on I think a couple of different occasions, was walked intentionally with the bases loaded.
Yeah,
and
we'll get to that a little bit later because that actually pertains to our trivia question.
It does, and but it's
getting walked with the bases loaded. That's the ultimate compliment for the batter.
I would say,
but I mean, it's just that's not good for the game.
No, and you walk. Say you walk Trout with the bases loaded. The next guy up, either potentially Rendon or Otani or Pujols, you know, and that guy has the potential to hit a grand slam just as much.
Well, I think it's like there's a lefty up and he faces a lefty and then Trout's up. No, you're going to walk Trout to get back to Otani because at least it's lefty-lefty. But then you have a guy on base, and then,
but if
Otani's still going to get a hit, and then it is extended, and the game's even longer. And
right.
What about
mid-at-bat pitching changes? Is this going to happen? Because now
mid-at-bat.
The mid-at-bat.
You can't
so,
do that.
So someone gets three balls. There's a 3-0 count on a batter.
Yeah.
Potential matchup coming up. Manager comes out, takes the pitcher out, brings in a new pitcher, tells him this is not a great matchup for you. Just go ahead and walk this guy.
Can you do that mid batter? I don't know, unless it's an injury. You can't take a pitcher out.
You can't. I don't know if this is in the rule book that you cannot change?
Unless it's through an injury, yeah.
So, I mean, it would create a scenario where the new pitcher coming in does get credit for that appearance.
Or you're going to see what you see a lot in international soccer, which is flopping. You're going to see a pitcher get the sign from his manager, say, hey, say your toe hurts. You're like, oh, yeah, my toe hurts. I don't think I can continue. All right, bring him out. Yeah, I mean, why not?
And they throw the new pitcher throws one ball, gets credit for facing the batter, and then only has to face two more.
These are the scenarios and the strategies that Manfred is making these managers think about now. That's not a good thing.
No, it's not.
I don't want them
to
think about how I can cheat. Because if I'm a manager, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm going to devise in spring training things to do, like to say, oh, my rotator cuff. Oh, my, I tweaked my neck. Sorry, coach. I don't think I can finish this inning. Yeah, good job. Get out of there. Yeah, 100%.
And you're
going to tell me that's part of the game now. Okay. Like, that's...
And the overworked reliever, you worked, a couple innings one day, maybe a couple batters the next, and then the third day... You know, it comes to his manager, says, I don't have a lot, but I could give you at least one batter. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
You know, it then limits your potential, you know, available pitchers in any given day as well, depending on how much you've had to use your bullpen in the previous couple days.
And the whole, you know, sending guys up and down now, they get sent down for, what is it, 7 days minimum now for a pitcher? I think it's something 5 days for a batter. That's another new rule. So you can't even stream your bullpen like that, like you used to be able to. They're tying their hands behind their back. They essentially just want it, like, why don't they just give everybody a corked bat? You know? I mean, at this
point. Put the ball on a tee. Let her rip.
Like, wasn't having the ping pong ball in 17 and 19, wasn't that enough to have the action in the game? I mean, because it's not really action. For people that love baseball, they're watching the game slowly morph into a three true outcome game where no longer is the old
walk,
slow game.
Strike out, home run.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it's basically turning into. And that's not good. That's not good for the soul of the game.
No.
Ugh. Disgusted.
Strikeouts are fascist. Besides that, they're boring. Throw some ground balls.
Flip it.
They're more democratic.
Flip that. But yes, no, I 100%. I agree 100%. Now, of course, they're also talking about video replay room changes.
Right.
You've seen this. Now, nothing's official yet, but Manfred said last month that the sport must, quote, drastically restrict in-game access by playing personnel to video.
Right.
Now, we don't really know exactly what that means, but something's got to give, right? Like, they got to change something. It can't just be they're policing
right, this
it
is,
better.
This is still fallout from the Astros.
Well, and the Red Sox, too, in terms of abusing the video replay room. And I would be willing to bet that all 30 clubs have at some point infracted on some detailed rule about, you know, being in the replay room too long or blah, 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 whatever it is. So what can you do? I mean, because a lot of guys go out mid-game, go to the clubhouse and watch their video replays. They use that BATS software that they can see like multiple angles of every at bat. Yeah.
Breakdown.
I know Corey Seager does
that. Their swing, mid-game adjustments.
I know that Jason Castro, the Angels catcher, does that too, not just for his own swing, but to watch his pitcher's performance because he only gets one angle from his pitcher.
Right.
So if he can watch his pitcher from behind and he can see, oh, wait, his arm slot's slightly different, it's hard to tell with the mask on. You know, there's all kinds of reasons that guys use these in the middle of the game. Now, is the only option to completely ban them? No more? We're going back to 1990?
Not during the game, but after is fine?
Yeah. You know, because there are some older guys or veterans that talk about how, especially like retired players, sort of saw the change of the guard there, that like guys don't really sit around after the game and talk about the game. They all just go and watch it like themselves, and they have like their own personal time watching video. If they do that, then maybe they go to the cage by themselves. You know, maybe they'll go to dinner together, but like a lot of people are saying that basically the technology has changed the game in the sense that they don't really talk about the game anymore.
Yeah, the way that the players are interacting with each other about what they see. There are different players' observations about what's going on.
Now, that seems like it's more just technology and just the evolution of the game in itself, and that you can't really change that. But, you know, Tony Clark, you know, of the Players Union, said earlier this week that the union would not object to losing the replay room. Now, they're already cutting down the time that you have to challenge a call from 30 seconds to 20 seconds. But would the other option be just completely putting it up like in like the press box and just having a designated guy up there?
I mean, there already is a designated guy looking at the replays to see if it's worthy of challenging. It doesn't matter where that guy sits as long as he can like call down or the manager can call up and say, hey, do we need to review that?
Right.
You know, and have that communication
happen.
It doesn't matter where the dude's sitting.
No, and you know, these guys watching the replays, like in the clubhouse, you know, in between innings maybe, or even in between at bats for like an extended inning, this also helps the umpires because it helps mitigate discrepancies between the player and the ump. Maybe the guy goes to the clubhouse thinking that that high fastball was not a strike, even though it was called a strike, and it struck him out, and he goes back and he realizes, Oh yeah, that was in the zone. Was, yeah. And so it helps in that regard too. You know, Corey Seager was quoted as saying, "You understand what he's trying to do, referring to Manfred, but it's definitely not the right way." Now, under MLB's proposed plans, access to the dugout and clubhouse during the game will be limited to players, 7 coaches, and necessary interpreters and trainers. The measure will be seriously policed, quote unquote, by an increase in MLB security agents.
And no front office personnel in the clubhouse during games.
Yeah, there was actually a GM, according to as an article by Tom Verducci, I believe, of Sports Illustrated, but there is a GM who was at one of these meetings, and Joe Torre, who is now the special assistant to the commissioner and senior vice president Chris Young, when they're telling teams that they're going to be cracking down when they're visiting all the clubs in Arizona and Florida, one of the GMs, off the record, said that Joe, quote, "Joe looked right at me and my manager and said, if your team does not comply, you're gone and you're gone." Now, I kind of like...
vaguely threatening.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I mean, they should have been doing that 2 years ago, but 3 years ago, for that matter. I like that, but I don't like it if it's going to, inhibit the players at all in terms of... Because a lot of these guys have always had video. You know, Albert Pujols was... just quoted recently saying something like, and I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, yeah, get rid of them. Get rid of the replay rooms. I don't care. He's like, I didn't have those coming up. I never needed those. I go up there and I adjust my swing and I adjust my at bat. Now that's coming from a 3,000 hit, 650 home run batter. But, most of these guys, they're in their early 20s. They've never not had video, and when they finally make it to the show, and they get all these extra resources like StatCast and everything, because there is no StatCast yet for AAA even.
Right.
And I wish there were, because it would really help fantasy purposes. That's another tangent. But they've never not had it. So how do you just all of a sudden take that away from them? Like we saw Kershaw and Jansen go into a Skyline? Sightline? What's it called? Up in Washington? Driveline. Driveline. I believe. Yeah, it's the pitcher and batter high-tech indoor training facility, which Trevor Bauer is sort of famous for going in there and understanding. He was saying, it's not just about seeing your pitches in real time and you watch the parabola and you watch, it all geometrically mapped and everything on a computer. It's also about the mental aspect of, oh, this is what my ball is doing. Oh, okay, so if I do this, if I tweak this, I can affect it. Where you can't really see that all the time when you're just watching one angle or you're just looking back at a TV broadcast. You kind of need advanced cameras and measures. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, that's modern technology, and these guys are using it to their advantage, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
But, should they have it in the middle of the game? I don't know. They already have, so how do you take it away? I don't know. I think they'll have to do something. They'll leave it in there, but maybe they'll have armed guards or something. I don't know.
Armed guards.
Well, some people are even talking, I think it was Danny Duffy was saying, just make it so that players can't leave the dugout for the entirety of the game,
Well, you got to have bathroom breaks.
No. He even said, they have bathrooms there, and that's it. That's all they need. They shouldn't be going in and out. He was kind of comparing it to, basketball players. You don't see them leave the court. Unless they're hurt, unless they're leaving the game, they stay there the whole time.
Yeah, it's very unusual that a player will leave the floor for any reason during the game.
As long as there's a bathroom, yeah, exactly. So I don't know. That seems a bit extreme, but we'll see. I mean, time's a ticking. They're apparently going around and telling the managers that whatever we decide, you better stick
to
it.
Be ready to comply.
I think everybody gets that now, based on the.
Well, I hope so. I mean, baseball definitely doesn't need another cheating scandal.
No, definitely not. And that's actually a good time to bring us to this week's Ig Noble Award of the Week.
What do you got for us? You, I know I had a couple of possibilities this week, but I think yours is takes the cake.
Knowing what we know now and... it's got to go to the Yankees team doctors and trainers.
Yeah.
I mean, they have just royally boned Aaron Judge.
It would Sorry definitely for the seem
blue
that
language,
way.
Kids, but after having misdiagnosed Judge's injuries almost 6 months ago, it appears that Aaron Judge is back to square one
stress
in regards
fracture.
To his injury timeline. Yeah, he has a stress
fracture in
his right first rib that he suffered while diving to rob a Pujols single last September. The fact that Judge, you know, arguably the face of the franchise, had a broken bone in his body and the Yankees couldn't find it, even after he told the team trainers that he heard a, quote, crack and a pop, it's hard to imagine.
I've had crack ribs and they're not comfortable. I can't imagine playing baseball.
And he played the rest of the season.
At a high level with a fractured rib.
That's the thing. You know, for a normal person, it takes about 3 to 6 months without surgery to fully heal. But if you're a professional athlete at an elite level, you can imagine without any sort of you know, physical therapy or anything to mitigate further fracture, it's going to be a lot longer. Anyway, he ended up sitting out just one game before he got back into the lineup, played the rest of the season and through the postseason, requiring multiple cortisone shots just to mitigate the pain. The fact that they played him every day through the playoffs isn't hard to believe. I mean, obviously it's the playoffs, but the fact that after the season was over, they didn't run more tests to at least see what, you know, he should and shouldn't be working on in the offseason is baffling.
Yeah, it really is. I think they definitely screwed the pooch, so to speak.
Yeah, because he even said, like, right after postseason ended, he came right back up to Northern California, where he lives, and he just worked out, like, hard, like, harder than he ever has in the offseason, because he was like, I know what I did wrong, I need to work on it. And he, you know, felt discomfort and pain, but he's like, well, this is probably just wear and tear, you know, I'm not 18 anymore. And so he ended up working out even more excessively than he would have because nobody told him not to.
Right.
And potentially ended up damaging himself even more.
Right.
Similarly, like, you know, 3 to 6 months without surgery for a normal person, but since he's been working out so hard, he was told that he probably is only about halfway through the healing process, whereas he could have been probably fully healed by now.
Yeah.
Making at 2 to 3 months seem like the best case scenario now.
Yeah, and that's it's horrible. It affects the Yankees in terms of, you know, what they're planning on doing this year. It affects fantasy drafts.
Right.
It affects the development of players in the minor league system for the Yankees, and just it's just horrible. Definitely.
Now, far be it for me to lose any sleep over an injured Yankee, but this is not what you want to see. This is bad.
You know, Yankees have had a rash of injuries the last couple of years, too, so it doesn't hardly seem isolated to just Aaron Judge.
Right.
I think something is going on.
Well, Stanton, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The guy goes out for a hip flexor, and then he gets bicep strain, and then
Had more injuries than any other team.
A calf strain, yeah.
And it's amazing that they did as well as they did, making it to the ALCS. And you know, it's just who knows? I mean, it's tantamount to the talent that they have there in New York to be able to overcome all those injuries. But the injuries, you know. Seem excessive.
It's egregious. It's really bad. I feel bad for them to an extent, but I feel more bad for my potential fantasy team. And I'm glad I didn't draft yet, honestly.
Yeah. No, anyone who has already drafted Aaron Judge and he's going to be out potentially for 3 months is really bad. Bad.
That's tough. And he's a big guy. Those are probably big ribs.
Oh, yeah.
All right, that brings us to.
I guess I don't have anything.
We gotta wrap it up.
Yeah.
We gotta wrap it up. This is. I love doing it 90 minutes. I wish we could do it like this every time, but
yeah.
we have had a lot on our plate here, so a lot to unravel.
Yeah.
Last
week's trivia question. Remind me what it was.
Do you remember last week's trivia question?
I don't. It's been 3 weeks. I don't remember.
Youngster. Let us.
Mustache, right? Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
All right, my stuff's all queued up. It's all bad. There we go. All right. Last week's trivia question. Now, it was a bit about Mookie Betts, but mainly it was the Dodgers. who was the last Dodger position player who had four consecutive seasons with at least a 6.4 WAR?
Right. This was, it was,
who was the last? Not the, not, there are actually only two, but, and we talked about Jackie obviously being, the first. He did it 5 years in a row.
Right.
But he, but who was the last to do it?
Right. All right. Do we have any, answers? Yeah. Any correct answers?
We got Peter M. in Santa Cruz says Mike Piazza in the early to mid 90s.
Decent
yeah,
guess.
That's the 100%. Like, that's a great guess because Mike Piazza was a beast. Sadly, though, that's not the right answer. Though, of course, he did have some insane seasons. 93. In 1993, he had a 7 WAR, so good there. In 95, he had a 6.2. In 97, he had an 8.7. And he was also sporting a 3.6 WAR in the cut short 94 season. So, potentially, he could have done it if he had played the whole season. But alas, no. Not Piazza, although he had some pretty amazing seasons
yeah,
there.
No.
One of the greatest hitting catchers of all time.
Indeed.
Sammy Shotwell in Flagstaff, Arizona says Pedro Guerrero. Ooh. Yeah.
Interesting guess, yeah.
You remember PG?
Yeah.
You know, he did have some great seasons, of course, with the Dodgers, most notably the 82-85 seasons. But he did not have four consecutive seasons with at least a 6.4 WAR. In 85, he only played 137 games, but somehow still managed to put up an 8.0 WAR.
Wow.
In 137 games. I mean, that's Trout-esque.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. While coming in third in MVP voting that year, he had an OPS plus of 182 that year, leading all of baseball. I mean, that's just insane. But while looking at the numbers for that season, possibly, I think, the most impressive stat is that he walked 82 times while striking out only 68.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, it puts Joey Votto to shame. With the leading OPS and OPS+, plus, I mean, it's just insane. He beat Mattingly, who won the AL MVP, by like 90 points or something crazy like that. It's insane. Pedro Guerrero was a beast. But no, he did not have four consecutive. We got Mallory B. in Montecito, California says, it's got to be the Duke. And indeed it is. Ding, ding, ding. Mallory B., you got it. You got the beer. You got the shirt.
Yeah.
Send you the address. Come on over. Yeah, from 1953 to 1956, Duke Snyder did put up a WAR of more than 6.4. In fact, his season WARs from 1953 to 1956 are 9.3, 8.3, 8.6, and 7.6, eclipsing the 6.4 mark by a lot.
No one else has come even close to that in the next 60 years.
I mean, that's crazy. 9-3 to 8-3, 8-6, 7-6. He didn't even have any 6s, 6-4s. Like, he obliterated that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see Mookie and maybe Belly do it, too. So, well, Belly's sporting that 9 more right now, right? So, pretty damn good. Yes, so there we go. Yeah, we got it. Now, what do you have for me this week?
Well, this year, I mean, we touched on it a little bit. The Barry Bonds treatment. In 1955. Is when intentional walks became an official stat that was tracked. And in those, was it 65 years, only one person not named Barry Bonds has been walked intentionally with the bases loaded.
Really?
Who was that person?
Only
one other person one time.
Alrighty, one other person to get walked intentionally.
With the bases
the
loaded.
Bases loaded. That's a pretty straightforward question. I like that.
I think so, yeah.
Now, I don't know. It must be... is it modern? Is it old? I don't know. Who knows? Email us, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Questions, comments, observations about life in general, so long as it pertains to baseball.
Sure.
Let us know. From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.